It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh, and there's Chuck and Jerry's here too, and this is Stuff You Should Know. It's one of our overlooked history editions. And Chuck, this is your pick, and hats off to you. Wigs off to you.
Yes, it was my selection to pass along to Livia to help us with, but this is a listener suggestion. This came from Gigi Cowlin.
Nice.
And big thanks to Gigi, because I, and I'm sure you will agree with me, found that not only is the story of the Compton's cafeteria riot interesting in and of itself,
right?
But sort of the larger story, or a part of the story, is the fact that how we preserve history, because Compton's cafeteria riot happened in 1966 and was almost lost to history.
Yeah, I agree with all that.
Which is crazy to think about. Something that happened in 1966 in San Francisco could be lost to history. But it almost was, if not for the efforts of one Susan Stryker.
One person. Like
yeah,
her.
This may have really gone away.
Oh, totally. I mean, it had gone away, and she managed to clutch together a bunch of different tiny little scraps of mentions of it, or like the neighborhood, and just over the years cobbled together all this little stuff and finally got an idea of it and was able to corroborate it. Like, it was Gonesville until Susan Stryker came along.
Yeah, and we'll talk about what Susan Stryker did with this information, but hats off to you, Susan Stryker, and to Gigi. And here we go with the almost forgotten Compton's cafeteria riot story.
Yeah, and the reason why it's significant that it's almost forgotten, or it was forgotten for a while, is that the Stonewall Uprising, which was a really great episode we did on that too, that's considered like the watershed moment of gay rights in history. Like the riot at the Stonewall Inn, that was it. That was what started it all. The thing is, when you think of things that way, it erases the stuff that came before that.
Yeah.
And one of the things that came before Stonewall was the Compton's cafeteria riot in San Francisco in 1966. And there wasn't a lot of difference between the two. It was based on, it was a reaction and a response to police harassment that had been building over the time. It was a multiracial group of LGBTQ people, like, fighting back against the police. It spilled out into the streets. Like, it bore a striking resemblance to Stonewall. And yet, like you said, there are reasons that we'll talk about that it was just pushed into the dustbin of history.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So as a way of setting this up, we'll talk a little bit about the area at the time in San Francisco called the Tenderloin.
Yeah.
This is in the 1960s. The Tenderloin has long had a reputation, and even still does today in some ways. In the 60s, it was a place where you could go buy drugs or deal drugs. You could go do some illegal gambling. Mm-hmm. You could get involved in sex work on either side. Mm-hmm. It was a neighborhood that didn't have a lot of money, and it was a neighborhood that attracted transients, people that teenagers, namely, who were either run out of their hometown because they were LGBTQ, or maybe even run out of their family, or maybe even run out of a different neighborhood in San Francisco to sort of collect in the Tenderloin, where they could turn to sex work because they couldn't get other jobs, and they could turn to each other for support and community.
Yeah, a community developed of essentially what one of the people Susan Stryker interviewed described as like the lowest rung on the ladder of right. not just society, of like including LGBTQ society at the time. These were unhoused, teenage, street trans people. And like they had no rights. They had no respect from anybody. And yet they still came together and looked out for one another and formed that community you were talking about. But they lived in really dire straits day to day, and yet they still formed that community. And the reason why they all kind of ended up in this, the Tenderloin, is because there was a few square block section of the Tenderloin that was the only place they could live. And even there, they got harassed. But like if they strayed out of it, they were beaten. They were, you couldn't leave that area if you were trans in San Francisco at the time. And I think Susan Stryker compared it to a ghetto, essentially, that was a trans ghetto in San Francisco in the 60s.
That's right. And just the myriad people that were interviewed from the time, it's clear that the cops basically could do whatever they wanted in there. They could arrest someone for, quote unquote, female impersonation. One was arrested, I believe, Amanda St. James, who was a trans woman there, ran a residential hotel, was arrested for obstructing the sidewalk. I saw in this documentary that we're going to talk about later, any kind of cross-dressing or drag, they could arrest you for having the buttons on your shirt on, you know, what they deemed the wrong side because, traditionally, the buttons on like men and women's shirts and clothing is reversed. I never understood why. Was it to draw a distinction between the two when you're shopping?
I think it's just to be difficult.
It may be a short stub at some point, but they would say like, oh no, your buttons are on the wrong side. You're impersonating a female. So let me crack your skull and throw you in a jail cell where you will be abused more and by fellow inmates and by the people who ran the jail.
Yeah, and one of the reasons that this group of people were in such a pickle was not just because there was a small area of the world that they could leave. It's that they couldn't even work because they couldn't get ID that reflected their gender, the gender they identified with. If they wanted to work as the gender they didn't identify with, they could just go back to their family that kicked them out in the first place. So right. To be themselves, to live as themselves is the way that they were who they were. They really, really suffered and paid for it and were very poor, resorted to sex work almost across the board, unless you were really good at singing and dancing and you could make a living that way. And even those people who were successful at entertaining very frequently were stuck in that area of the Tenderloin too. So it was a tough position to be in. And I mean, just the fact that they're like, well, if I want to be myself, it sucks that society treats me this way, but I'm going to be myself. You really have to respect that.
Oh yeah, totally. Within this community, there was a place called Compton's Cafeteria, which provided a haven late at night. So it was at 101 Taylor Street, right there in the Tenderloin, and it was a restaurant, and it was one of quite a few in San Francisco. It's a small chain, local chain, started up by a man named Gene Compton in the 1940s. This one opened in 54, and it became a gathering place for these people late at night who are unwelcomed even at gay bars. It was very centrally located. It was clean. It was open 24 hours. It was well lit. It was a place where they could go and have coffee after, you know, they got done with work or, you know, doing whatever they were doing late at night. And what I really wanted more than anything when I was learning about the story was like, I wanted to learn that Compton's Cafeteria was a bright spot in a haven where the owners would run the cops off and let these people do as they would and live in peace. Sadly, that was not the case. I didn't get the idea that they were just like completely unwelcome there, but they did call the cops here and there over, you know, over the years, and like, you know, the cops would come down there and run him out. So that was sort of a one disappointing spot for me. Mm-hmm. But that's, you know, that's what happened. So that's the way we have to report it.
So still, I mean, even having to face that, like Compton's was the place you went to because, like I was saying, like even in the LGBTQ community, the trans community and the Tenderloin were not well thought of. Like they couldn't even go into the gay bars in the Tenderloin. They were limited also in where they could go. And but one of those places they could go was Compton's cafeteria and go be themselves. And like a real, like you could check in on one another. You could give each other tips to like steer clear of this guy in this car kind of thing. It was, despite the setbacks and drawbacks of going there, it was a place that they could go. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and it was also a time, you know, we mentioned that they couldn't even go into certain gay bars. It was a time where the LGBTQ community was starting to organize a little bit, starting to kind of speak up a little bit for, like, the most basic rights you could imagine.
Right.
And it was through the lens, though, of what were called homophile organizations. One was called the Mattachine Society. These organizations where they were gay people, but they were like, hey, listen, I'm middle class. I have a great job. I am gay, and I just don't want to be harassed. So they were organizing, but it wasn't like the kids on the streets, and they weren't rabble rousing. They weren't radical. In fact, within homophile organizations, there were often disputes between some of the sort of, you know, middle age, more, you know, not well heeled, but sometimes well heeled people. Sort of disagreeing with people in their own community, some of these younger kids mm-hmm. that were more radical, they're like, we don't even want you in our group anymore.
Right, yeah. And those homophile groups, they were the ones that had the connections to, say, the press, or they
right.
had a working relationship with the police department. They were trying to show the rest of society they were respectable people living respectable lives. And so being inclusive of unhoused trans teenagers who were also sex workers, it didn't really stand up to their argument. So they just pretended they weren't there. They excluded them. They kept them out. But what's cool is those same unhoused teenage trans sex workers, they were like, well, we'll go organize ourselves.
Yeah.
And they were really, really fortunate to have in the neighborhood a couple blocks away from Compton's a place called Glide Memorial Methodist Church. Probably one of the more progressive churches in the United States of all time.
Yeah, I think so.
There was a reverend named Cecil Williams. He was a civil rights movement vet, and he was very much interested in supporting these trans kids who were just getting abused one way or another by every quarter of society. And he helped them organize, actually. And they organized into an organization called Vanguard.
That's right. And Cecil Williams is still alive, my friend.
Oh, yeah.
He's 94 years old.
I saw footage of him preaching, and he looked pretty cool.
Yeah, so that church was there, and like you said, just to have any formal organization on your side for these kids who are trying to radicalize the movement was a really, really big deal. Mm-hmm. So Vanguard had formed in 65, and through the church and through Cecil Williams and Vanguard, they eventually would help get the Tenderloin recognized as a war on poverty target district in May of 66. Usually when these districts were recognized, it was they were, you know, impoverished communities, and usually racism was sort of at the core of what they were facing.
Mm-hmm.
But these kids basically stood up with Cecil Williams, and they're like, well, no, we're suffering the same way. And so we should be recognized thusly, and they were in May of 1966.
Yeah, that was a big deal to get those kind of grants. And it ended up, there was like a center for the kids living on the street. There was a van that doled out medical services. Like it had a pretty good effect, as we'll see.
Yeah.
So you said that there were times when Compton's cafeteria would call the police on their patrons, their trans patrons. Apparently, that really picked up after Vanguard, after it became clear that these trans kids weren't just like keeping to themselves as much as they could, that they were starting to have a little bit of self-respect, that they were organizing, that they were getting political. That's apparently when it really started to step up. And the as Vanguard, I think at one point picketed outside of Compton's. That was one of the things that they did. And that was a month or so before the riot happened. So you've got these trans kids organizing, starting to have like a certain amount of self-esteem and self-respect that's coming out of their community. And that usually leads to pushback from establishment. And that's what happened.
That sounds like a great place for a break, my friend.
Thank you.
All right. Well, Josh set it up perfectly, and we'll be right back to knock them down right after this.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Know why a bowling analogy happened just there.
I don't know, but it was great. I love your sports metaphors.
Is bowling a sport?
Sure.
Oh boy, I'm going to get in trouble for that.
Yes,
one.
You are. I said sure, everybody.
So this is how lost to time the Compton Cafeteria riot has been, is they're not even positive still what the exact date was.
Yeah.
Stryker did a lot of research, Susan Stryker, who we mentioned and who we'll talk a lot more about in this segment. Eventually, Stryker narrowed it down to August 27th, which was a Saturday, the last Saturday of that month. But we can safely say it was in August of 1966, probably late August.
Yeah.
Very early in the morning, as in Saturday leading into Sunday. And the story is a lot like you said, it's a lot like Stonewall. The police get called in. because things are kind of rowdy. The police get there, start being very physically aggressive with these people. And then one of them threw coffee in one of the cops' faces. And it was on after that, basically. It went downhill pretty fast. Other patrons joined in. The cops started fighting back. The cops eventually go outside and retreat, wait for reinforcements. The management, you know, closed the place up. And the people inside started breaking the windows. They started trashing the place. They flipped the tables over. They started wrecking it. And, you know, the cops showed up en masse to deal with about 60 people or so that fought the police with their purses and throwing high heels. And I think they destroyed a police car by the end of the night and set a newsstand on fire.
I saw potentially hundreds of people, like the nearby hotels, like drained, the bars drained. Like it got serious, like after they left Compton's.
Yeah, so unsurprisingly, some of them were successfully arrested and taken to jail. And Compton's, you know, for their part, basically said, from now on, you know, they called them, you know, drag queen patrons at the time, said, you're not allowed here anymore. No more gay hustlers. Apparently, there were pickets after that. Like, the ensuing days were kind of a mess. Some people would still go down and picket. They wouldn't be allowed in the restaurant. They started closing at midnight instead of being 24/7, and just closed, I think, like 5 years after that permanently.
Yes, but it had immediate effects. First of all, it took that kind of sense of organizing among the trans kids in the Tenderloin. It like bolstered it. It gave them like a feeling like, oh, we actually can make things happen together, even if it was violent in the face of police violence. And apparently it had an effect that the police kind of stopped so casually harassing or beating or even kidnapping the trans kids in the Tenderloin after that. Immediately after that, there was an immediate effect.
Yeah, for sure. They ended up having an ally in a community relations cop named Elliot Blackstone, who basically was like, you know, I would like to help you folks out. I'm going to advocate for an end to these anti-cross-dressing laws so you won't get harassed for dressing how you want to dress. I'm going to help you get the services that you need. Eventually, a public health unit called the Center for Special Problems started offering their support as well, including getting IDs that reflected their gender identities, which is what you were talking about that kept a lot of them from getting jobs. And that allowed many of them to go get legal work and, you know, they could leave sex work behind.
Yeah. I mean, it had a significant impact, especially considering that it was forgotten really quickly after that. It was also given credit for establishing the National Transsexual Counseling Unit, which is a support group for trans people, probably the first one in history. And it was a place where, like, if you needed a place to stay, they could tell you who to go ask. They could help you fill out applications for hormones and tell you what doctor to go to. It was a mail drop for some people who had just showed up and didn't have a place to live yet. Like, basically everything that supported unhoused trans kids in the Tenderloin in the late 60s, the counseling unit did. And again, this Compton's cafeteria riot is directly responsible for not just saying like, hey, we have these needs that are being completely unmet. We're the police are beating us with impunity anytime they feel like it. I read one story where this kid had just shown up to San Francisco, and one of the first things he saw was another kid laying on the street in agony, saying his ribs were broken. And the kid who just got into San Francisco was like, well, we got to call the police. And the kid with his rib broken said, the police are the ones that did this to me. Yeah. And that guy, I think he was one of the Vanguard founders. He's like, that just crystallized the situation for him almost immediately. But in responding to that with violence, it's sad that it took violence, but they finally stood up and said, no, we're done putting up with this. And that actually had a positive impact in drawing attention to their needs and then getting the city to start responding to those needs, or at the very least recognizing that they exist.
Yeah, absolutely. Boy, it would be a Kettle of Fire as an episode, but I wonder if one day we could tackle protests, nonviolent and violent protest.
Okay.
Through the years, because it is a fraught topic.
Supposedly, I don't know where I saw this, but I think I just saw it today, something like 59% of nonviolent organizations or nonviolent movements succeed in their goals, but only like a quarter of violent movements do. So usually you want to back the nonviolent ones is the if you're betting on it, if you're betting on outcomes of civil movements.
So we mentioned forgetting about the riot and how that could happen in 1966, right. Not even that long ago, relatively speaking.
Yeah.
Historically speaking, I guess I should say. And how does that happen? And here's how that happens. No one really wrote about it, even in San Francisco. The straight, quote-unquote, straight publications didn't write about it. And largely, the gay publications didn't even write about it much. I believe there were a couple of members of the local gay community who wrote about it. A gentleman named Raymond Brashear wrote about it in the 1972. So this is 5 years later.
He was a local, very, very radical reverend who was also gay. I think he was a Vanguard founder, too.
So he wrote about it in the 1972 Gay Pride Program. So just in a program for a gay pride event. Mm-hmm. And then a drag queen at the time named Sandy Green mentioned it in a letter to the editor. Again, this is 6 years later. I'm sorry, 5 years later, I guess.
Seven
years. Oh, wow.
We got
pretty
there.
Bad.
We got there.
The 73 issue of Gay Pride Quarterly. But it was not, it wasn't even remembered in the LGBTQ community in San Francisco.
Right.
Forget about the rest of San Francisco or America at large. And the question is, like, why did Stonewall become the thing? And there's a few reasons. One is that it was in New York and it was the center of publishing. So that certainly didn't hurt.
That's a big reason.
And media. Another is that these homophile groups that we talked about in that kind of short 3 year span from 66 to 69 started to model themselves a little bit more after things like the Black Power Movement and the Women's Rights Movement, and were a little more sort of activist and action-oriented than they were before, when they were just in 66 saying, like, you know, can we just have rights like everyone else? They got a little more aggressive.
I saw it put in that there was more kindling. Like, they were just starting to bring the kindling out at the time of the Compton riots. But by the time Stonewall happened, there was a lot more kindling to go up.
Totally.
Okay.
And that's, you know, that's another really big reason.
Yeah, it's pretty pretty interesting stuff. Also, I think the fact that, like, it was almost purposefully, if not purposefully, ignored or just kind of relegated to the sidelines by the larger LGBTQ community in San Francisco because, you know, it was a riot. And that really, again, doesn't jibe with the idea that, hey, we're just respectable middle-class Americans who want to live a quiet, respectable life and be left alone. Rioting doesn't really kind of coincide with that. So when you put all those things together, it definitely makes sense that the Compton's cafeteria riot kind of was lost to history. And the fact that it was written about in just two places, or it was mentioned directly, is really significant. Like, it really underscores what Susan Stryker did when she came up with the, I guess, the detective work of putting the whole thing together.
I think that's another great spot for a break.
Oh, man, I didn't even mean to do that.
You're just so good. We'll be right back, everybody.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get emotional with me, Radhi Devlukia, in my new podcast, A Really Good Cry. We're going to talk about and go through all the things that are sometimes difficult to process alone. We're going to go over how to regulate your emotions, diving deep into holistic personal development, and just building your mindset to have a happier, healthier life. We're going to be talking with some of my best friends.
I didn't know we were going to go there on this.
People that I admire.
When we say listen to your body, really tune in to what's going on.
Authors of books that have changed my life.
Now you're talking about sympathy, which is different than empathy, right?
And basically have conversations that can help us get through this crazy thing we call life.
I already believe in myself. I already see myself. And so when people give me an opportunity, I'm just like, oh, great, you see me too.
We'll laugh together, we'll cry together, and find a way through all of our emotions. Never forget, it's okay to cry as long as you make it a really good one. Listen to A Really Good Cry with Radhi Devlukia on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So back in, I think, the early 90s, maybe even 91, Susan Stryker was, she was wrapping up her PhD at UC Berkeley. She was a trained historian. At the same time, she was also transitioning to a woman, and this is 1991. So she's basically like, I might as well not even apply for jobs in academia because I'm not going to get one because I'm trans. So instead, she started volunteering. She wanted to put her historian chops to work, and she decided to volunteer at the Gay and Lesbian Historical Society in San Francisco in the Castro. It was there that I think she first came across that 1972 Gay Pride Parade program that Ray Brosheers wrote that mentioned the Compton's riot. And she's like, what is this guy even talking about?
6 years later. I think it said four.
Eight. 92.
Just terrible. And you know, when you see this documentary that I promise you were about to name it, you can, like, Susan Stryker is struck by the fact that, like, she was just like, I couldn't believe what I was reading almost. Mm-hmm. Like, how did I not know about this? Like, I'm an active member of this community. And everyone knows about Stonewall. Like, how did I not even know this?
Well, she questioned that it might not have even been a thing, or if it was a thing, that Brosheers was maybe blowing it up out of proportion.
Yeah, but, you know, if in 66, you know, obviously way pre-internet, there's traditional media. And if traditional media didn't cover it at all, the only thing you're left with is people and oral history. So that's what Stryker did. She at first tried to go to the city archivist to look for police records and arrest records. And the archivist said, you know, in the 60s and 70s, they basically shredded and burned a lot of stuff because of police misconduct. So we don't have anything for that period or that event, at least. And so Susan Stryker was like, all right, I guess I got to start finding people, like literal humans who were either there or were nearby and knew about it firsthand. And that was really hard to do. I mean, all of a sudden, it's like real detective work going on because Susan Stryker is having to track these people down, these people that were living on the margins, you know, 50 years ago, I guess at the time, about 40 years ago. So, or no, less than that, 30-something years ago. I'm trying to think. Something like that. And there were plenty of different stories. Like in one story, she found a trans woman who was a cook at Compton's, but was put in a men's prison, was not allowed an interview, and ended up dying before Susan Stryker could speak to her. She thought about writing a book and ultimately said, you know what, I think this should be, it'll get to more people if I make a documentary out of this. So at long last, we can say that the name of the documentary that Susan Stryker, along with Victor Silverman, made was called Screaming Queens, : The Riot at Compton's Cafeteria in 2005, which I watched on YouTube.
That's great.
In full. It's under an hour. It's like 55, 56 minutes. But it's also dramatized, which I have not seen, but I'm going to check it out tonight. And Netflix's show Tales of the City in 2019 that I believe Elliot Page stars in.
Oh, is that right?
I think I saw Elliot Page in the cast, but I didn't dive too deeply yet.
So there's a Unsung History podcast episode that interviews Susan Stryker, and she kind of goes into detail about putting this whole history together. And it's kind of thrilling, actually. Like, it turns out one of her cohorts at the Gay and Lesbian Historical Society was a geographer and helped put the, like, create a map of this vanished area in the Tenderloin together. So she started to have, like, a visual idea of where these things were happening. And when she was able to finally talk to people who were there, she knew that this thing actually had happened because she didn't say, hey, here's all the stuff I found out. Is this right? She was like, have you ever heard of this? And then when they would give her all the same information that she already had, she knew that she was definitely on to something.
Interesting.
So it's definitely worth checking out. It's a great, great episode. And definitely watch Screaming Queens too. And the name, I think, Chuck, was in that there's an initial like newsreel about the Tenderloin, the red light district down there.
Yeah.
And they mentioned how Compton's cafeteria recently had to start closing at midnight. And they chalked it up to a sidewalk fight between Screaming Queens is how they put it. Like they just basically made it sound like it was a cat fight that got out of hand. The police weren't even involved.
Wow.
And that's how they explained how Compton started closing at midnight. So even then, like this is an old newsreel. Even when, it, like, right after it happened, it was being ignored.
Yeah. Like, yeah, that's really hard to believe, but also easy to believe in some ways, sadly. So these days, you can still go over to 101 Taylor Street. That building is still there. It is obviously not the restaurant any longer. It is still a home for many trans people, and the Tenderloin itself is still has that sort of spirit and undercurrent there. People are, you know, it's sort of how San Francisco is treated. Both this area and this riot is really interesting for a progressive city, because they haven't done the right thing in many cases over the years. Some people have tried. In 2015, there was a developer called Group I that proposed building a hotel and retail project there with a nonprofit space. A couple of blocks away from the location at Compton's. And, you know, different people were on board and then, like, within the gay community, and then were like, no, I don't think we should do this here because it's a historical area and we should just preserve it as that. And I think that's just sort of like a lot of people are fighting back against that in general in San Francisco, kind of no matter what the cause.
Yeah, for sure. So they finally, I guess they went along with it, or it just was going to happen one way or another, but they got some concessions out of the developer and the city. And one of the things that was that came out of it was that the area on Taylor Street that Compton's Cafeteria used to be along, they renamed it Gene Compton's Cafeteria Way.
Yeah.
And at first, everybody was like, okay, that's a compromise because we wanted it called Compton's Cafeteria Riot. I guess, way. And the city was like, no, we're not putting riot on an actual official street sign.
Yeah.
So they said, well, we'll call it Gene Compton's Cafeteria Way. And then later on, they're like, no, actually, that's a terrible name for it because it commemorates one of the people who was anti-trans, who kicked us out of his his cafeteria routinely. Why would we want to commemorate him? We want to commemorate this uprising instead. And they finally changed it to, what did they change it to?
Well, they dropped the name Compton's because they didn't want to honor someone who they said, you know, would frequently call the cops on him.
Right. So I can't remember what they named it. I think it might be like Transgender Corridor Way or something like that. And the reason why is because there's a transgender cultural district there now. And do you remember our colleague, she was a trans woman, Raquel Willis?
Oh, yeah, sure.
I read an article about this new cultural district that she wrote in, I think, Out Magazine. It's pretty good.
That's great.
Yeah, Raquel, I thought it was great, too. So it's probably the first transgender cultural district in the entire world, and it's very appropriately in the Tenderloin because this is like kind of like where a lot of the like ground zero was for the trans community in America. And this cultural district has like a, I think, an entrepreneurial incubator. It helps people looking for housing and jobs. It's everything that you would kind of want as a start for a community that's just now starting to have its needs met.
That's great.
I think so too.
What if when the city said, oh, we can't have the name Riot on a street sign. What if they were like, what about Quiet Riot Boulevard on Russian Hill? You're awfully quiet about that one.
Is there really a Quiet Riot Boulevard?
I got you for once.
Oh, okay. The fact that you placed it in Russian Hill is what got me. That was well done.
Oh, thank you.
Very well done.
All right.
Okay. Well, if you want to know more about the Compton's Cafeteria Riot, definitely go watch Screaming Queens and go listen to that episode of Unsung History. And thanks a lot, Gigi, for the idea. Great one. And since I thank Gigi, that means it's time for listener mail.
Yeah. And, you know, that makes the overall gullible score, Josh, 463, Chuck, 1.
Hey, at least it's not a big goose egg for you.
I got points on the board.
That was a sports metaphor.
That's right. Followed by following a Quiet Riot shout, which is probably not something you expected to hear in this podcast.
No, but they hold up.
All right. I'm going to call this Handburger. And quite frankly, the only reason I'm reading it is because of that word, because I think it's hysterical what this guy says. Mm-hmm. This is from Danny. Hey, guys, just finished to the latest episode. And the listener mail, Sam, mentioned he was hesitant to try the show because the title of the show sounded condescending, as if it was suggesting that he should already know certain things at this point in his life. Mm-hmm. I've heard you mention this about other people. It always cracks me up because that's exactly why I started listening. It started about 7 years ago. The person I was dating at the time would constantly poke fun and belittle me for not knowing certain things.
That's abuse.
So one day I... Huh?
That's abuse.
It is abuse. So one day I literally typed stuff you should know into Google, hoping to find a list of things that I ought to know.
Awesome.
True story, is what this guy says. What I found instead, thank God, was your show. Admittedly, it took me a while to realize you two weren't simply performing a public service to the world, informing idiot boyfriends of their obvious knowledge gaps and remedying the situation. It probably wasn't until the Jackhammers episode that I asked myself, should I really know this?
That's abuse, too.
That is, Danny. This is the best part, though. Needless to say, but I'm going to say it anyways, the relationship did not work out. What I learned, though, is that everyone has some knowledge gaps. So what if I thought it was a handburger rather than a hamburger?
I think that's important.
There's no ham and you eat it with your hands, is what Danny says.
It makes sense, but everyone else calls it a hamburger, so...
Or a steamed ham.
Steamed ham, right.
I'm only going to call them handburgers from now on, though.
Yeah, because he makes a really good case for why you would call it a hamburger.
Or that I didn't know IV stood for intravenous. What am I, a doctor? Who gives a rip? I like Danny.
I like this guy, yeah.
All that to say, thanks for doing what you do, guys, for teaching me stuff I want to know as well as some things I probably should know. Keep it up. Until the bitter end, Danny.
Thanks a lot, Danny. That was an excellent email. And we're glad that you're on board.
I wonder what Danny thought IV stood for.
I don't know.
Or if it was like IVY or something.
Right. He's like, four?
Like, why are you going to put IV in my arm?
Where was I? Oh, yeah. If you want to be like Danny and send us a rockin' email, we would love to hear from you. Wrap it up, spank it on the bottom, send it off to stuffpodcast@iheartradio.com.
Stuff You Should Know is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
It's been almost 3,000 years, and Greek mythology has proved that it is not going anywhere. But it can be difficult to find entertaining and engaging retellings of these myths that aren't fictionalized. Lucky for you, I'm here. Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the Greek mythology and ancient history podcast of your dreams. I dive into the convoluted and confusing ancient sources so you don't have to. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you ask two people the same seven questions. I'm Minnie Driver, and this was the idea I set out to explore in my podcast, Mini Questions. This year, we bring a whole new group of guests to answer the same seven questions, including Courtney Cox, Rob Delaney, Liz Phair, and many, many more. Join me on season three of Mini Questions on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Seven questions, limitless answers.
Parents, if you've ever experienced bedtime battles with the kids, I'm going to let you into a little secret. The Koala Moon podcast has revolutionized over 20 million bedtimes, with parents like you calling it life-changing and the perfect nighttime routine. With original kids' bedtime stories and cozy sleep meditations, every episode has been specially designed to make bedtimes a dream. Listen to Koala Moon on the iHeartRadio app, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.